Hello, everybody, and welcome to Fortress Comic News, episode 352. I am one of your hosts, Chris, alongside my co-host, Mike.
Hello. Hello, Mike. Hello, hello. Nothing much. It's been a snowy and a sunny week, and now here we are with more snow, so that's going to be fun.
You're in the worst spot in New York right now.
Yeah. Like the fucking ass crack in New York. I'm very upset though, because like my cat she sleeps in the spare room and I close the door and everything's fine. We've been chit chatting for maybe, I don't know, 15 minutes before we start recording.
Yep.
And then as soon as you hit record, I hear like a meow and she's like up staring at me. Like now she's going to be scratching at me to like let her out of the room, but too bad right now. But I just like, I don't know how she knows.
I was really concerned before this because so the room next to this has like my TV and everything in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in there just watching some shows. I got sucked into this documentary before we were recording. And Greedo had just like walked in here and sat on this chair and like claimed it. And I was like, oh man, am I going to have to like move him? Cause he looks so comfy. And I just don't like moving him when he's comfy. And as soon as I get up, he just runs away.
Nice. Nice.
And now he's behind me.
Okay, I got a couple story times for this episode because we don't have an interview today, so I figured I'd fill some time. You have some comics on display behind you, like on the wall. I didn't know this, Chris, so I have some iconic issues on the wall next to my desk here, like Invincible number one and things like that. Not that I would ever sell them, but I definitely noticed when I was looking at some issues that there's definitely a color difference, even though they're not in direct sunlight. So I didn't know that, like, even though the books aren't in direct sunlight, if you have them hanging on a wall, this is like a public service announcement for all you comic collectors. It really fades the ink, even like the indirect sunlight. And so like, I didn't know the slow change. I didn't notice it over the years because these have always been my wall, but now I'm like, damn. If I wanted to sell these, they would not go for anything. It's that bad. But I mean, I'll always keep them because they're like, they mean something to me. But that's it's public service announcement, kids. Get some UV blocking cases or just cycle out your comics when you have them on a wall.
Yeah. The two you can see are CGC graded. And those are UV blocking cases.
They do have UV blocking?
That's pretty sure, to the best of my knowledge, yeah. And I actually buy... So the other ones I'm going to put up, I buy... So you do a lot of magic cards and everything. You know, like the hard plastic sleeves you can put cards in? Like, they're really valuable. Like, you put your Black Lotus in there or whatever. They make those for comics, and they make UV ones.
Oh, nice. And
I use that to hang some of them, too.
Oh, okay.
Because the hanger I use literally just like clamps on the book and then screws into the wall.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to look into those. The ones I have are just like the black frame, plastic frame ones for comics.
There's some of those too. Usually when you buy them, there'll be an extra, a little more expensive, obviously, but there'll be a little thing on there that tells you they're UV protected and all that.
I'll have to find new ones. If I have to buy these books again, I don't know.
I'm not too worried about down here though, because I am in a basement. So
yeah. Yeah, even just having window in the room, like I always thought like out of direct sunlight would be fine. I was wrong.
Yeah.
But I did notice an also difference because I have like new comics and old comics. The old comics inks and printing style definitely holds up better to degradation than the new stuff. Like the new, we always talk about like the argument of like the newspaper feel versus the glossy feel. And like they definitely were printed at higher qualities back in the day. For sure.
Yeah, definitely. And it's just part of the business. Things got like labor got more expensive, rightfully so.
Yeah.
And the quality of the books had to go down because of it. So I think there was a story recently about DC is actually going to. Yes, this was a few weeks ago. We don't really talk about this kind of like in-depth stuff, but there was a story about DC is actually downgrading the quality of their covers. Starting, I think, next month.
Oh boy. So
Marvel's been doing this for a while where the cover's the same page quality as the interior pages.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And DC was doing the opposite, and now they're going to be downgrading theirs. And I mean, honestly, I think the DC interior pages are better than Marvel anyways, so it's not a, to me, it's not a huge deal.
Yeah, I don't think, as long as you like bag and board them too, like, you don't notice a difference.
Yeah.
Other story time. So I've been playing casual Magic once a week at a shop, and there's a shop in the area that surprisingly has comics. They have like manga. It's a pretty big like game shop, but they have comic books, some absolute editions and stuff like that, some cool statues, action figures. And I walked up to the guy and I said, "Do you guys do a pull list?" I was just shooting the shit about comics while I was waiting around to play, and they're like, "Pull list? They're like, what do you mean, like cards?" And I'm like, "No, like comic books." And they go, "Oh, you mean like a subscription?" And I didn't put two and two together that like if you've played Magic first, a pull list to you is like you send the shop a pull list to pull like Magic cards for you to build decks with.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like if you're a comic book person first, a pull list is they pull issues for you. But like when they're like, "Oh, you mean a subscription?" I was like, "Yeah, yeah, that's a." Yeah, it's just funny the interaction I had. But then the dangerous part is, you know, I have a lot of cards that are worth quite a bit of money. So I've been like offloading those to the game shop just so I have store credit. But they let me use store credit on anything, Chris. So now I can start converting my Magic cards to comic books.
Yes.
Which is like, I'm just like in the shop, like just cycling my money, like Magic cards, comic books, Magic cards. It's just nice. A never-ending cycle now.
I love it. Dude,
I think it's awesome.
I cataloged two more long boxes yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think I told you I'm starting with my DC.
Yep.
And it's like all right now, all the stuff I'm like pulling out and cataloging is New 52.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so much nostalgia, man.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to go back through that stuff.
In my head, I've been describing Forever Evil as like this. Oh man, it was really simple. It was like four or five issues. This great, like just simple story and everything. And I pulled all of the Forever Evil because I have every issue. Mm-hmm. I have all the side ones.
Yep.
Everything. That was like a 7-issue series.
I do remember it being 7 issues. Yeah.
And there's four. No, 3 side books that were each like 5-6 issues a piece too. I'm like, this was a huge event and I don't remember it this way. Like in my head, I'm just like, it was just really cool. Like I miss when it was like this.
Well, that was every main book had like 3 villain books, right?
That too. That happened around the same time because you can see where my books start having the Forever Evil stamp on them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the villain thing happens.
Yeah, that shit was awesome, where, like, the Aquaman book turned into, like, the Black Manta book.
Yeah, and the whole lenticular covers, man. So
yeah, that was such a great idea. They don't do shit like that anymore.
And then I did... Here, I got one. They're, like, right here right now, because I'm trying to get them into the boxes correctly for when they're done. Yeah. But then, like, Future's End, if you remember that event.
Yep, I do remember that.
That had a similar thing with each of the books. So like right here is the Green Arrow one.
Oh yeah.
Lenticular cover.
Yep.
Dude, I fucking love these covers. They're so great.
With the future. They're like all future poses.
Well, just the lenticular, it's so great.
Yeah, I know.
And then I had another nostalgia blast because one of the books I pulled out was New 52's Batman Superman.
Oh yeah.
With art by Mike's favorite artist of all time, Shai Lee.
Written by Greg Pak.
Greg Pak.
It's a great series. Unfortunate art, but Greg Pak. Greg Pak did a great job with that series.
And then the only thing is I was disappointed in myself because you're going through the CLZ app and cataloging them. And I have it on my PC. And I'm going through and I'm like, I would end a book when a writer I liked stopped writing it or something.
Mm-hmm.
And now with like the knowledge I have today of like writers I really enjoy, there was these like, for instance, Swamp Thing, like Scott Snyder did Swamp Thing. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped when he left. And then this little up and coming writer called Charles Soule took over.
Mm-hmm.
and I don't have any of those issues. And I fucking love Charles Soule.
Yeah, you got to go back and get those issues.
Yeah, so now it's like, oh man, I got some stuff to like.
I don't even remember him taking over.
Dude, you going into some of these, and I'm just like, that's who took over for it? Holy shit. Like, why wasn't I all over that?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I actually, a few years back, CLZ split up their programming to where if you have it on your computer or your phone, you pay separately now. It used to be all one price.
That's fucking stupid.
I use it on the phone. I mean, in their defense, it was always cheap as hell to pay for the subscription. But I use the phone just because you can scan the barcodes. And now there's like almost always a barcode on the front of a comic. It just makes things quicker.
So I found out that you can download an app that's connected to your PC version that also scans the barcode.
Oh, cool. With like your webcam?
No, with my phone.
Oh, with your phone. Oh,
yeah. Okay. So it doesn't let me use the CLZ app on my phone, but there's an app that can let me scan it. And then I found out if you pay for both, you can just import them. So I'm thinking, because it's easier to do it right now. This is some really hardcore organization talk right here.
Oh,
guys.
Hell yeah. This is comic collecting talk. This is the things you don't know about.
Because I have so many and none of them have been cataloged, it's easier to do it here on the computer as opposed to on my phone. And I'm thinking if I do it that way, import it to the app, and then I'll continue with the app from there. Because, Mike, I'm currently at 700 comics cataloged, and I haven't put a dent in my collection.
Yeah, see, I had done this, and I've kept up with it since college, which is a while ago now. But I had a lot of extra time on my hands after I graduated college, so I just went and I think I cataloged maybe 1,500 at the time or something like that, and even that was a doozy. But then you're going to get into, like, you try to do everything alphabetically, and then you're like, well, I have way more Batman than everything else. So like, I need a huge section for the bees and like nothing else.
Yeah,
but it's it is fun to do.
It's fun. It's stressful. I'm considering just taking time off work to do it.
Yeah. I you know, I have to use it on my phone because I have everything in the basement. But I have a table set up now where I can go down there and slowly do them, like a little bit at a time.
Yeah.
Not try to spend hours at one day and get it all done. So.
Yeah, well, the reason I found out there was a scanner is because there's I was going through Justice League, and just because of how my life had been over the past 6 years or so, a lot of stuff wasn't organized properly during that period of time. So like, there's literally a gap where like all my new, like I said, I'm doing New 52 right now. All my New 52 stuff's one place, and then there's just like other stuff in other places. So my Justice League goes through New 52, right? What I have here right now, and like the rest of it's somewhere over there. And I don't know if you remember when Justice League turned into, so A, we had Justice League Dark that came out, and then it became JLA.
Yep.
And then there was Justice League of America, which is different from JLA for some reason. Yeah. And it's just,
it flipped around a few times.
And you look around and it's just like, there's so many volumes of all these books that trying to find the right one. So I literally couldn't find which volume JLA was.
Yeah.
Because there's different volumes of Justice League of America and then there's different volumes of JLA.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's, so I literally like just
six volumes. Yeah.
I literally just scanned the first book and was just like, okay, tell me where this is.
Yeah. It's impossible to find some of those.
Yeah. It's been an adventure. But
and then like you get into JSA because like one of them was just JSA the title and then one is actually spelled out Justice Society of America. It gets insane.
Yeah.
And then the indie stuff, you have to make your own area for, like you scan the cover and make your own if it's not already in there.
That's gonna be the fun part when I get into like Kickstarter books. That's why I've told a few Kickstarter creators that I believe goodwill that indie creators could make for themselves. I mean, it would take some time, but like, I just think it would do goodwill for their fan base. And anyone out there listening can take this advice, is to input that themselves, because you can input it to the database.
Right.
And anybody can access it.
Yeah. That's what they should be doing. Instead of my shitty picture, my cover
from
my phone. But All right, I guess we'll talk about the news a little bit now.
All right, let's do it.
This is pretty cool. Last Monday, Amazon Prime announced that it's ordered a full season of their adaptation of Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips series, Criminal. Brubaker has written the pilot episode and will act as co-showrunner alongside known crime author Jordan Harper. I never read Criminal, but something up your alley.
Yeah, I love Criminal. Yeah. It's just such a great series. And there's a volume. It's one of the later volumes that takes place in the Comic-Con too.
Oh, that's cool.
But Criminal is that book that Brubaker and Phillips are going to go down known for. Especially now there's going to be a TV series of it. But that's just like, that's their seminal work. And that's kind of the most pure of their work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really just a crime noir book about a criminal. No real fluff on top of it. I mean, I've always said, like, Brubaker Phillips books are the same formula with a different skin put on top of it, but I love the formula so much. And this is kind of the base. This is what everything's built off of.
Yeah.
I'm really excited. I hope it gets done right. To know that Brubaker's like in the writer's room, show running the book, really, or drawing the series, really taking ownership of it is a good feeling. So I think it will be done right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm super excited for this.
Yeah.
And yeah, I can't my mom, my aunt, the people in my family that are like crime fans that watch like NCIS and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then watch this and they're like, oh, this is really good. And I'm going to be like, yeah, it's a comic book.
It's a comic book right here. Look, you fools, you've been trapped.
I gotcha.
Gotcha. This was freaking epic. Netflix released the first trailer for the upcoming Master of the Universe Revolution, which releases on January 25th. So fairly soon. It looks epic. We have the King Randor dying, and like He-Man's like, I need to take up the mantle. I shouldn't have to give up my power. And then Skeletor just looks awesome. Mark Hamill as Skeletor was such a great addition.
Yeah.
It just looks epic. I can't wait for the season. The show has been so much fun.
It's so close. And I've been thinking about rewatching it because it's been so long. I love those first two volumes.
Yeah, me too. It's really good.
Yeah, I think the trailer is just phenomenal. I'm really looking forward to this and to see where they take it. If we were kind of talking off air, how you kind of feel like this is going to be the end.
Yeah, they're making it feel like that for sure.
And I get that feeling too. But so I'm wondering, will it be the end? And if so, where does the show end up? Like,
right.
You know, where do we go from here? But yeah, dude, this show's been so good. And this is coming from someone who's not a big Master Universe fan. So I think you got both sides here. Mm-hmm. Mike being a big fan, me not so much, and we both fucking love it. So
yeah, it's great.
Really excited for the show.
This is some interesting news. Lucasfilm dropping some sauce. They announced that they had begun pre-production on Ahsoka season 2, which is awesome. And Mandalorian season 4, very good news. It was also announced that Mandalorian's going to get its own feature film on the big screen. It's going to come to theaters called The Mandalorian and Grogu. Have to guess that that's going to be a Mandalorian-focused movie.
Yes.
Unlike the Dave Filoni one where they're going to do like a huge crossover movie I think they had talked about
previously. Yeah, the Filoni one is going to kind of end cap the whole Mandoverse, as we're calling it. This is actually directed by Favreau.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which is going to be good.
Yeah, he's taking the lead on it. There's a lot of interesting thing here because originally it was reported that this would be season 4, which I think that's the plan, that this will kind of take the place of what they're going to do for season 4. And now season 4 is something else because they did say they're doing a season 4 of the show.
Okay.
But do you do the show and just assume everybody's watched 3 seasons of the show, or do the movie and assume that?
Yeah, the interesting thing here is this is the first time they're doing like something where like, this is a TV show and now we're going to make a Star Wars movie of it. Which it's a pretty big leap, I think. Like you said, you know, maybe some people are like, I don't watch the Star Wars shows. I just like to go see the movies in the theaters. Which maybe it's something like outside of time. It's just them traveling together and doing some stuff. I don't know.
This is always my thing. Like, I don't care too much about like the, on a personal level, I find it interesting what the financials say about things, but like on a personal level, I don't like root for a movie to fail or succeed.
Right.
I'm like, these companies are have enough money. If they lose some, I'm not like heartbroken.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this is a franchise I'm so invested in and have so much love for that, like, if this comes out and fails, it could mean a lot of things.
Right.
I don't think this is like Marvel where they can put out the Marvels. It could fail miserably and they can just be like, eh, on to the next one. Like, I think Star Wars has had a lot of bad press in terms of their movies recently. And this is their big return.
Yeah, which is like to return with a movie that's like already has some established stuff that's already been like the foundation is in the TV shows. So it's like,
yeah. So
we'll see.
So my big question becomes, do they have to do like a recap of some sort and then make me and you sit through a recap?
Yeah.
Which will then bring our enjoyment down, or do they just assume, listen, you got to go get Disney Plus and watch these three seasons if you want to know what's going on here.
And
that has its own problems.
I mean, for me, I think they got to change that title. Hopefully it's a working title. Just The Mandalorian and Grogu is just a weird title to me. Especially, like you said, with the title alone, they're expecting people to just know. Because, like, Grogu, they don't even mention Grogu till after the first season, right? It's just called The Child.
The Child, yeah.
So, like, that's just a big part of the first season is they don't ever mention his name, I remember.
I don't even think it's till late second or early third season that he gets a name.
So, like, right there, you're like, okay, here's a character. If you've never watched a TV show, you don't even hear his name, even if you are watching the show. Like,
yeah, that would be, like, Episode 6 back in the 80s being called like Return of Luke Skywalker. It's like,
yeah, they're like, who's that?
You kind of assume that people are going to see the third movie know who Luke Skywalker is, but like, it's not a very profitable name.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I don't know who this guy is, but hey, sure.
To be fair, Return of the Jedi is a little rough too, because like, you're making assumptions, but that all being said, I love Return of the Jedi name, everybody. Like, don't shit on me for that. I'm just saying, look at it marketing wise and like, So I kind of agree with you there. Like, they need to think of something.
It could just be a working title. Who knows, like, when this will even come out?
It could be, yeah.
Yeah. But either way, I think interesting approach. Ahsoka, we're getting a season 2 of. So I really like that first season. Excited to see more of that.
Yeah, we glossed over that.
Yeah, I know. That's like a big piece of the news too.
I'm really happy about that because I think we said, or I said when that was over, if that was the end of Ahsoka, I think it's satisfying, but I really would like to see more.
Yeah, and I agree.
Here we are. So,
Yeah, I can't wait for more of that.
Yeah, we have to see how they get back.
Yeah, yeah. You've been watching a couple anime things, so you can. Let's hear what you got to say about that.
Yeah, this is a weird turn. I don't watch anime.
Yeah, I know. We got a little anime segment now with Chris. Delicious in Dungeon. I'm curious about that because that is one I want to start watching.
See, I mean, it continues to be a blast. Like, this dwarf character is so great. Like, he's great in the manga too. The one volume I've read, everybody, but his voice acting is so perfect to like who he is. And in this episode, so I wrote down the what they cooked in this episode. So the first recipe is roasted basilisk. Do you know what a basilisk is, Mike?
Yeah, like a giant mythological snake
with a chicken tail.
Okay.
Yeah, so they kill it and they make basically roast chicken.
Nice.
And then they make, with the leftover basilisk, they make mandrake and basilisk omelets.
Okay.
You obviously know what mandrakes are. I know you're a big Harry Potter fan.
Yeah, this is like a Harry Potter episode between the basilisk and and the mandrakes.
And then they make mandrake kakij, and big bat tempura.
Ooh, nice.
So this one, they're further into the dungeon, obviously, and you get to see like the dungeon has different ecosystems.
Yeah.
And what's really great is, so the group they're in, one of the characters is basically a thief. If you ever play D&D, like the thief is really good at detecting traps and things like that. So that's his job, is the inner room. He realizes there's traps and he has to like show the party how to navigate through. And the dwarf just gives zero fucks about it and just like powers through it. And then like, as like all the traps go off and everything, he's just like, oh, like I could use that to cook, because that's all this guy cares about.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is like, there's a fire trap. And he's like, I wonder what kind of oil they use. Like a lot of these dungeons use vegetable oil.
Oh my God.
Hence how they make the tempura.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
And yeah, dude, the show is just a blast. Like it's silly and goofy. It doesn't take itself too seriously, but I think people that have a grounding in like D&D culture, especially D&D culture, but like general fantasy culture.
Yep.
It's something way different from what you're used to. So I really like the show. And actually, a good friend who's a little bit older, who's like he's my DM for my Dungeons and Dragons group. I'm trying to get him just to watch the first episode. And I'm like, I even told him, like, I don't think you'll like it. I just want to know your opinion on the premise.
Yeah. Yeah. See what he thinks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so everybody should check out Delicious in Dungeon. And it's really, really cool that it's weekly, because now I get to talk about it every week with you.
Yeah, like a TV show. Yeah, that's cool. I got to check it out.
Yeah.
And then another one you've been texting me about because of the lack of Godzilla, and which I'm surprised you stuck with for so long, is the Singular Point anime.
Yes, and I stuck with it for so long, Mike, because it's good. The unfortunate part of it is it's titled Godzilla Singular Point.
Giant monsters in it at all?
Oh yeah, yeah. Throughout. Oh,
okay.
It. Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
There's pterodactyls in it, and they call them Rodans. Okay. It's not Rodan, but they call them Rodans. And then there's like other like creatures that pop up, like kaiju.
Yep.
So the joke with Mike was that we get our first appearance of Godzilla in episode 7. It's 12 episodes long.
Yeah.
You really only see the scales, and they call him Godzilla. You don't see Godzilla until episode 10.
Oh my God.
Which is why I think you will hate it, because you'll just be so frustrated at the point.
Well, I like Rodan and stuff. I like all the other monsters. So if they do shit like that, I probably would be okay.
At its core, this is a Jet Jaguar show.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the creation of Jet Jaguar and what he means to this world and all that stuff.
That's cool.
It's its own universe. So anything you know about Godzilla, throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
What I liked about it is that this mist appears, and that's when all the like kaiju things come, and different monsters. Not all of them like Godzilla is the big one that like can take down cities. They're not all like that. A lot of them are dinosaur-esque and just very big creatures.
Yeah.
But Godzilla is seen as almost this Revelations-esque figure that like when he comes, that means the end of the world.
Mm.
And so he doesn't have a connection to the nuclear bomb either, which is interesting. He's more connected to this mist that is natural in origin, but like kept at bay throughout the centuries and all this. So yeah, it's about that. It goes like hard sci-fi at points where there's like time travel aspects to it. There's obviously Jet Jaguar's in it, so there's a giant like mech fighting in it. And then what I found interesting, and I started reading up about it after I finished it, so there's a end credit scene after the show is done in which they create Mecha Godzilla.
Okay.
So there's a plan for a season 2, but this show came out 2 years ago and there's nobody said it's canceled.
Okay.
So I'm not familiar with anime culture, so I was reading up on it, and there was a lot of stuff where they're like, listen, it's not like in North America where you expect to get a show every year.
Right.
Like, they could take 2 to 3 years to have a second season come out. Mm-hmm. So nobody said there's a second season, but, like, everybody in anime culture is like, there's going to be a second season.
Yeah.
And apparently this one season took them 4 years to make.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a lot there. And then I was reading further that even though that took 4 years, because they have a lot of the stuff like down now, and like a lot of that's building the story arcs and doing models and all that mm-hmm. stuff. So like a lot of it's done. It'll take less time, but that's still good. Could take some time.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out.
And I like the... So I know I complain a lot about like the CG 2D in yeah. American mm-hmm. Cartoons, but this has that, but it's so much better than anything we're doing.
Yeah.
Like the way it flows is way, way better. And that was the thing that really sucked me in and kept me watching. I was like, this animation is just phenomenal. And it just mm-hmm. continues that idea that Japanese animation has been ahead of North American animation for decades.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, you remember watching Dragon Ball Z for the first time, and you're just like, yeah. This is possible?
Right, right. Yeah. So they just killed it.
So it's not rated very high, but I think it's an enjoyable show. Like, it has a lot of cool things to it. Yeah. I think when I look at the rating and I'm thinking about it, I'm like, I think that's Godzilla fan just being mad there's not a lot of Godzilla.
Probably. Probably.
And I'm usually on their side on this one, but I'm like, this show's I really enjoyed it. So
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah.
Movie news. After Steven Yeun's exit from Thunderbolts, it seems that Marvel has already sent out offers to replace the role. It's being reported that Austin Abrams was offered the role and is expected to take it. That name sounds very familiar, Chris.
Yeah, I just remembered I was supposed to look him up. I'm not familiar with the name.
Yeah, he's in Euphoria. Okay, so that's like the show that he's popular in.
Yeah, it's the only one I know, but I've never seen it.
No, he's in Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Okay, so nothing like, he's never been the focus of anything, really. Chemical Hearts, I've heard about that. He's done some TV stuff and some other things, so.
There's a movie called Jewtopia.
I guess so, yeah.
A romantic comedy centered around a Gentile who pretends to be Jewish in order to win the affection of his love.
Wow.
It's got Tom Arnold in it. Oh, yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, 2012. There it is. Yeah. That's funny.
Oh, that's actually, I do know him from something. He's in The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
He had a 9-episode arc, and it's going to take me forever to figure out.
Ron Anderson? I don't know when that was. But yeah, everything else I don't recognize. But I'm sure he's a good actor. I mean, for this guy and also for Steven Yen or Yuen, not really big dudes playing the Sentry. Right.
I mean, Steven Yen has his following.
No, I mean, as far as like physique wise, built like superheroes, right?
No, not really. I mean, Sentry's got. He's not really Shazam, but he's got Shazam-esque quality to him.
Yeah.
Sentry is a confusing character, man. Like,
yeah,
I'm actually shocked that they're willing to go that way, but yeah, I mean, it's also, I mean, do you remember when they, if we go back to the greatest actor of our time, Chris Pratt, when he was cast and he was this fat guy on Parks and Rec,
sure. Like, so they could have a training plan,
in
place. I'm sure they have the money and people to do it for sure.
But we'll see. It's being widely reported, but it all did come from a leak. So
yeah. And Steven Yeun just won a Golden Globe for something I didn't see, but I was watching the other night. He won something.
Speaking of which, I was trying to remember, what's that show, that Netflix show he did that everybody was talking about?
That's the one that he won a, he won an award for, and I can't remember the name of it.
It just made me think of it, because I was like, yeah, I should check the show out, because I really like Steven Yeun. Oh, Beef.
Yeah, Beef. Yeah, that's the one. Yep.
Beef, yes.
They won a few awards. I got to check it out. Which I started watching The Bear after the Golden Globes, because that one guy won an award, and that show's, if you like food, that show's really cool.
I've heard good things about that show.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's really good. It's like mental health, cooking. It's a pretty interesting look in like the life of like being a high end chef and stuff like that too. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. But yeah, we'll see who ends up playing, because I'm pretty sure it's going to be, there's been too many reports to say it's not Sentry. So we'll see who ends up playing Sentry. If this guy ends up being it, then we'll talk about it then more, but yeah.
Chris watched Rebel Moon part one. I forgot it's part one. Boy. So what did you think, Chris? What's your take on it?
I think I liked it more than you.
Okay.
But not enough to like want to read a comic about it, or like
the comic that comes out next week. Or yeah. Actually today as the episode drops.
I don't think it's deep enough to like justify me digging into an expanded universe, but I thought it was a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, so as I'm watching it, things I'm thinking are, damn, Zack Snyder really loves slow motion.
Oh my God, yeah. So much slow motion in this movie.
It's unreal how much he used. Like, that movie could literally be 45 minutes shorter.
Oh, yeah.
Not for slow motion.
And the lens flare.
And I'm stealing this joke from somebody else, but it's now my official joke of Zack Snyder. This movie does not deserve to be, have a director's cut from Zack, director's cut Snyder.
Right.
It's fine the way it is. I mean, I just don't see the reason to make this long. I mean, does he have more slow motion he has to show me? but all my jokes aside, I thought the story was fine. Like, I like the world he built. It was a little weird at first, but I'm like, man, this it started off real episode one and two.
Yeah, it really did.
You catch my drift.
Yep.
And then got better as it went along, got more action. We get the more of the world. I thought we'd see more laser swords. We saw like one.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Not enough laser swords.
I think one of the reasons I did enjoy it is so we talked about it being Star Wars meets Dune.
Mm-hmm.
I also think he took a lot of inspiration from Fifth Element.
Oh yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot of Fifth Element in that movie.
Yeah, there is.
Jax from Sons of Anarchy, his big like turn was the most obvious thing I've ever seen. So
yeah,
he's the only one in the entire movie that like doesn't have a reason to be there,
right?
So it was weird.
Yeah.
And then so most of the movie was A, them talking about farming. And then the second act is like, and I know when I'm saying this, everybody's like, you like this movie? I'm like, it's fun. Like, it's good. I'll watch part two. But the first act is them talking about farming. The second act is, let's get the band together.
Yeah.
And then the third act is the big turn with the big fight. And then they go home to be like, and we won. And then it's revealed, like, you didn't win. Like, the dude's alive.
Right.
And sets up part two, so... I think it's good. It's worth watching if you're like a sci-fi fan. Dig into it. It's cool. It's just there's very little Star Wars in there. So I don't understand how this is a old Star Wars script that he wrote that was turned into a movie. And if it was, I can understand why Lucas is just like, hey, if you want to make a Star Wars movie, you should probably put some Star Wars in there.
Yeah. Or he had to change some things.
Well, I'm sure it's changed, obviously. Yeah. Like, yeah. But if the nugget of it is a Star Wars movie, other than the idea that there's this like grand empire
that they got to give crops to.
Yeah. That is like kind of enslaving these worlds. There's just not a ton of Star Wars there.
Yeah.
I other weird thing. So I liked the little robot that they had like in his moments. I thought he wasn't used enough personally. Mm-hmm. And I hope he's used more in the next episode. Little weird to end on him with like antlers. Don't know what that was about.
Yeah. Don't know. I don't know where he's going.
It just cuts to him and he's got antlers on. I'm like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, very strange.
So he didn't go full sucker punch, but he got close at times. When I was looking at the credits, I'm like, okay, other people helped him write this. So that's what steered him away from sucker punch.
He had some help with it. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. It's an enjoyable movie. It's just I'm when I go back to like things I didn't watch last year and I think about my top five, I'm like, okay, this didn't affect my top five at all. It would not have cracked.
Yeah, anything. It's not up there for sure.
But I'm glad I watched it and I'll watch the second part.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll see if I watch the second one. We'll see how I feel when it comes out at that point, if it does come out.
I like the bad guy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, he was good.
I mean this in the nicest way possible. Like, that dude played such a good role that I'm just sitting back going, like, he'd be a good Nazi.
Put him in a Nazi movie.
I mean, that's basically what he was playing.
Yeah, that's the that's the Empire in a nutshell.
Yeah, so.
All right, comic news. Already getting some stuff about Free Comic Book Day, I guess. Yeah, well, May, right? So,
yeah.
Marvel released their solicits for upcoming Free Comic Book Day books. While the books themselves are exactly what you expect, an X-Men primer, a Spider-Man book, a Blood Hunt prequel, and an Ultimate Universe story, it's the latter that makes the news. It's the Ultimate solicit. They reference a team coming together to put the universe back on track and will be in a future story from writer Denise Camp and artist Juan Fregari. So you have this team here, Chris. We got, is that a Doctor Doom in the background?
I don't know if this is going to be the team.
Okay. But we have like Iron Man, Cap, Green Goblin, Spider-Man.
So what's interesting here is we'll talk more about the Ultimate Universe in our What Did We Read section, but that's not, I think that's supposed to be. So if you know how Marvel does their Free Comic Book Days, it's multiple things in one book. So they'll do multiple stories in one book. So I think this is like 616 Spider-Man and 616 Green Goblin, because I don't know if you know, but like Green Goblin's back in the 616.
Okay.
I don't know what the Latveria thing's all about, but this is obviously Ultimate stuff. And yes, we have Cap, who as of now is still frozen in ice in that universe. And you say Iron Man, you're correct, but it's actually Kang.
Oh, it doesn't look like Kang.
Yeah. Tony Stark is Kang in this universe now.
Okay. Yep.
But what's interesting here is, and we talked about it ahead of time when we were talking about the Ultimates universe and the announcements and everything, that I thought they would give Ultimates more time to breathe before they jumped into it. And they're not. It's obviously gonna be like this summer where we get it if they're doing a Free Comic Book Day issue about it. So yeah. I'm excited. I really enjoyed the first issue of this new Ultimates universe, and I'll dig deeper in that later. And I love the Ultimate universe. So we'll see. I have no clue who this writer is, though. What's his name again? It was Dennis.
Denise Camp.
Denise Camp.
And Juan Fregari did this. Looks like he did the cover too. Looks really good.
Denise Camp with a Z. So Denise, he's done a bunch of stuff. He did 20th Century Man at Image, Children of the Vault for Marvel, Agent of World for Scout. So he's been around. Did a Bloodshot book, apparently. That's unfortunate.
Oh, okay. So he's done some stuff.
He's done some stuff. So yeah, he's been around. And I'm rambling a little bit, but I look forward to some Ultimates. I look forward to see how they treat Cap in this universe. I like the Ultimate Captain America, a little more of an edge to him.
I guess we'll see when DC feels like announcing theirs shortly after this. IDW announced this week that they have renewed the TMNT license and will continue to produce those comics. Days after the announcement, they released a press release to discuss the issue of 150. It'll be the last issue in that version of the Turtles. We should expect an announcement about a new line of comics surrounding them. Yeah, so they've been doing this for a while, Chris. So this is a pretty big... I have a cat up behind my head here. but this has been a long time coming, I feel like, for these comics. And I'm interested to see what they're going to do next. If they're going to do a new team with like a younger Turtles or what they're going to do. So,
well, it's big news because IDW lost Hasbro last year. Hence, we've got the Energon Universa image now.
Yep.
Hence, we got Rom at Marvel, kind of. And they needed to keep a big license. Like, the IDW at its core is a license machine. Like, they do Sonic the Hedgehog. They do Turtles.
Yeah.
So this was huge for them. And I kind of knew this was coming because they already announced that Ronin, the last Ronin Volume 2, is coming this year, too.
Mm-hmm.
From what I've been told from people I know that are big Turtles fans, I would say I'm like a casual Turtles fan. This has been like one of the better Turtles runs ever. Like, people really hold this to high regard from what I know. And it's interesting that it's just ending. And I really respect that.
Yeah. Putting an end to it.
Yeah. Like, giving it a conclusion, saying we're going to do something different now. Because Turtles is this weird product where, like, it's such a simple, it's same with most comics, but it's such a simple premise. And you think like, oh, it's like four turtles that know Kung Fu and ninjutsu and all this stuff.
Right. Right. And there's a giant rat.
And yeah. And like, how much can you really do with that? But there's been so many different variations. So it'd be cool to see where they take the new Turtles universe next year. Or so, and where that's going to get announced, because this comes out in a few months.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's a big con in between there to like make a big splash about it.
No, I would say it's interesting for somebody like me that has never read these books and now they're starting fresh. I would be almost interested to check one of the new fresh issues out.
Yeah.
But
it would be interesting for me too. I'd want to see what direction they're going before I make that commitment, but
yeah.
Yeah, it's good for IDW and good for Turtles fans. Like, they're going to continue to get kind of a conclusion, a really cool 150 issue run that people seem to love with a bunch of side stories added in there too.
Like, right.
And now they're going to try something new. So we will see.
Yeah. Here we go. Ahoy Comics announced a new series from writer Tyrone Finch, artist Sebastian Perez. Called Deadweights. Deadweights is a 6-issue series about a couple of henchmen for a villain that gets fired for being, they get fired for being incompetent. Then they decided to try and go legit, but realize it's harder than they thought. This sounds awesome.
Yes, I love, I tried at one point to get a henchman story written and I couldn't like crack the code because I love the idea
of like the wasted henchman.
Yeah, like, who's the dude that signs up to work with the Joker, man? Like,
why? How did they get there?
Yeah, like, either how, like, desperate are they or how crazy are they?
Yeah.
And so hope I'm really going to be interested in this one. So I hope it's good and I hope it turns out. And I like the art they got going on for the solicits and just everything. Dude, Ahoy's doing, this is why I love Ahoy. Like, I should be a bigger supporter like you are of Ahoy because they're doing interesting things.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And this just shows the depths they're willing to go with those interesting things. So,
yeah, I got to catch up on some of their books. I've only really kept up with the Dragonfly Man stuff and the Billionaire Island, but there's a lot of other stuff I want to be reading for sure.
And you were big into My Bad too, right?
Oh, yeah, My Bad was really good. Yeah, that was another one that I loved. Yeah.
Did you read the Business Dog Acid Chimp crossover?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I need to read. I didn't know that was a thing. I need to read it.
Okay, we'll talk off air. But I want to read that too, even though I didn't dig deep enough into either of those books.
Acid Chimp was amazing.
Yeah, I just love Acid Chimp.
Yeah. Fun conversation. DC has apparently told Marvel that they own the character Machine Man. As reported by Bleeding Cool, DC owns the rights to both the movie and the comic adaptation of 2001, A Space Odyssey, in which the character Machine Man gets his origins. 2001, A Space Odyssey was written and drawn by Jack Kirby back in 1976, which was his return to Marvel after creating the Fourth World for DC Comics. Interesting. So, right. It is under the Marvel Comics group, but...
Well, yeah, so this book, so I believe this is just an issue I found that had Machine Man in the cover. But yeah. This book was, yeah, published by Marvel Comics.
Right.
But 2001 A Space Odyssey is owned by DC now.
Right.
So if they were to reprint it, they would reprint it with a DC banner.
Interesting.
Similar to how, like, Marvel's been buying, or I should say Disney's been buying everything. So now Marvel, right. like, publishes apes mm-hmm. and everything. So now there's, like, a conversation about, like, Marvel can't use Machine Man anymore. And I was thinking about it because I like Machine Man. He's an interesting enough character. He's a little wacky.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen him in a long time.
Right. He hasn't been mentioned in a long time.
Yeah. And I think the last thing I saw him in was in a Marvel Zombies book.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... This is a thing that doesn't happen often between the big two, where, like, a character makes a crossover like that. And I think there's so many cool opportunities here for, like, something fun to happen.
Oh yeah.
And for DC just to go full asshole and be like, not only do we own them, but now we're gonna publish a Machine Man book, even though nobody will buy it.
Yeah,
just
no,
to be like,
five people will buy it.
Marvel.
Yeah. Yeah, this is what we're doing. I don't know, people will buy it if they get like Sam Humphries writing it or some shit like that.
If they get the right people writing it, yeah. People buy anything. But, like, Machine Man's not a very popular character.
No way.
So.
No.
It'd be more interesting if this was, like, Captain America, but, like, just the fact that it's any character. Just,
it's pretty funny.
Actually, I think the last time Machine Man showed up was in that Namor book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the one that took place in the future where, like, global warming took over.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because machines ruled, and he was one of the machines that was, like, leading the robot people. So,
oh, that's funny. A
couple of years ago, it's been. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably, if they, like you said, if they get the right team, I'll probably check it out.
Yeah, I'll be following this very closely to see if anything happens, because it's just, this does not happen very often. Between the big two, it does not happen very often.
Yeah.
It, like, the closest I can think of in terms of the big two, and this comes along with me cataloging my comics, was when I was going through my Green Lantern stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember when they did the Green Lantern Planet of the Apes crossover book?
Oh, yeah.
Back when Boom Studios was doing Apes books.
Yes. Yep.
And now, like, Planet of the Apes is a Marvel thing. Like, that's kind of the closest, but even that doesn't compare to what, like, the ramifications of what this is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no way.
Like, we could see Marvel Comics republished by DC, which isn't unprecedented, but, like, it just it doesn't happen.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And now let's talk about what we read this week. I got a whopping 2 issues caught up because this week was just not good for me. But hopefully next week, maybe. I got to travel next week, but I don't know. I caught up on JSA. So JSA number 8, I thought it was a really good issue with the Red Lantern and the Red Lantern's daughter, you know, going around just killing Russians and stuff like that. And then, you know, Green Lantern, Alan Scott saying that, oh, your dad's dead, blah, blah, blah. And then, I think the interesting thing was the reveal at the end. There's a Legionnaire looking for her. We don't know which Legionnaire, because they're wearing, like, a mask over their face.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because, like, we know that Huntress is from a different timeline and the Legionnaires are from the future. So, like, why are they getting involved now?
Also, do you think that Geoff Johns is, like, teasing that he's going to do a Legion book?
I think so.
I think so too.
I think, like, anything he touches in his books, he's going to start writing about in another book. He just can't help himself.
I kind of criticized him doing JSA at the beginning because I wanted a new voice on JSA. Not that I didn't think he'd do a good job.
Right.
And I'm starting to think that this was him setting... He wanted to reset up the JSA as characters to make people care about him so that somebody like Tim Sheridan, for instance, could take over JSA characters.
Yeah.
And they could keep getting books moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And this is his stealth way of being like, and I'm moving on to the Legion, which yeah. I'm all for.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. But and also like the Alan Scott book, they're talking about the Red Lantern, so like they're definitely like trying to reel all this stuff in between the all the JSA books, and like they're like, oh shit, we need to catch people up on and let them know there was a Red Lantern back in the day because we're going to talk about it in the next JSA book.
Yeah, I mean that's I think that's why we're getting like Jay Garrick, Wesley Dobbs, yep. and Alan Scott book.
Yeah,
are to set up things that will affect the current timeline mm-hmm. and to like be like this was always a thing, even though we're retconning it.
Right. And you think about it, like all those three books you just mentioned, the Wesley, the Alan Scott, and the Jay Garrick, all focus on a singular villain. Mm-hmm. We could almost get like an evil Justice Society spinning out of those books, like because they're each setting up a villain.
And that's kind of where I was thinking, like this will end with him setting up like a big bad team, like their version of the Legion of Doom.
Yeah, which would be awesome.
And I could see him being like, all right, we've gotten these creators to come in and prove to you they can write these characters. The nostalgia of me being Geoff Johns writing right. it can fade off. And these people, one of them can just take over or it, you know, whatever. But I don't see him continuing with Just Society stuff after this. I see him moving on to Legion.
Yeah.
Which, like yeah, I said, be cool. would be huge. Mm-hmm. I'd be so happy. Just, I want a Legion book so bad.
Yeah, give us a Legion book already.
Yeah.
And the other book I got to this week, because I did not want to go without reading it, was Titans Beast World number 4.
I was hoping you'd say that.
Yeah, sorry, Sandman had to wait till next week.
I didn't get Sandman either, so don't worry.
Okay, dude. the start to this book with Peacemaker is got to go intercept Chester Runk, who has like this power where he has like a black hole in his chest or something like that when he gets scared.
Yeah.
He gets off a bus because he takes the bus and has to save him from these monsters, and he shoots him in the head, and he said, you just killed my son. And Peacemaker's like, oh shit, my bad, dude. so like Waller has him go capture this guy, and she's working with, we know she's working with Lex Luthor to use his transporters to, she wants to teleport this guy with a black hole in his chest into the middle of Beast Boy. It's a really, so we have this whole scene with Giganta gets bit and turns into a giant bear. So you have a giant bear like terrorizing the city, like laying waste to it. So there's a huge fight scene with Titans and her. That scene was fantastic.
I knew you'd love that scene.
Dude, it was so cool.
A kaiju like, oh. bear? Like, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, like Giganta comes in and like takes them all out and is like, oh, everything's fine. And then she gets poisoned and you're like, holy shit, that was sick. Swamp Thing getting involved was pretty cool. So I have a feeling they're going to be using him later. And then like Waller takes this guy and sends him into the brain of Beast Boy as he's like this giant Starro creature to create a black hole and then his brain and kill them both. Like while all the heroes are like in space watching this happen. And meanwhile, I think it's was it Raven who is fighting with the Dr. Hate? Talk about like the Lords of Chaos and shit like that. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, she opens up this black hole. It kills them both, we think, at the end of the issue. So really crazy to see where this goes next because the heroes just like watch that happen. And I think they kind of know that Waller doesn't give a fuck about them.
Yeah, this is a big like villain turn for Waller officially.
Yeah. Yeah, you literally just killed like one of the like biggest Teen Titans.
Yeah,
and like Dr. Hate was distracting Raven because she like loves Beast Boy. So yeah, there's not really any coming back from that, Chris.
Oh, I did think it was funny that like as she's given her like villain soliloquy talking about like what she's gonna do.
Yeah,
she's like, yeah, and I'm gonna put a bomb inside of Beast Boy. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I have a shtick, but like, you know, it works.
Yeah, literally put a bomb in his brain. Bigger this time.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right. Couple of books from previous weeks. Batman Offworld number 2 came out, and this issue was a lot better than the last one. It's all about Batman doing his big prison escape from this from the ship.
Yeah.
And where he ends up, and he like, so it's him like, this is basically his journey of learning about the fact that there's like extraterrestrials and because it's him like early on in his career, mm-hmm. and how to fight them and how that could help save Gotham for some reason. And he ends up on this planet that's like kind of desolate, and the people are having issues, but he finds out there's a villain there that he needs to fight, and that's where the next issue is going to start. I think Jason Aaron's got a good grip on like the character Batman, and I think it's a good book. I'm not a huge fan of Batman in space. I kind of like him just running around Gotham, personally.
Yeah. But you have a lot of other characters you could bring to space in DC.
Yeah. And then the second and last issue of Geiger Ground Zero, I finally read. And I enjoyed it. It's mm-hmm. it's still just like, well, yes, it's Geiger's origin, and we did kind of do that in the original series. It's also kind of the origin of what happened to the world, which mm-hmm. was a little interesting. I think all in all, it's an okay book.
It's not like necessary for the Geiger storyline, though, I would say, right?
No, it's very much just like an ancillary, like we need to put out something Geiger.
Mm-hmm.
And then they immediately tease that they're doing a Geiger ongoing.
Yeah.
Afterwards. And I should have read further, because I think they claim Gary Frank's going to do the art.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. They have Gary Frank listed as the artist for it.
Let's hope it's on time, folks.
So here's the Ghost Machine calendar at the end. So December was Geiger Ground Zero number 2.
The Rook comes out soon, right?
So January, so we're in January now. So in the next couple of weeks, we will get Ghost Machine number 1, which is kind of the big anthology with everything in it. And then there's nothing coming out till April, which is going to be Geiger number 1, the ongoing series mm-hmm. with Gary Frank as the artist.
Okay.
Listen, I love Gary Frank, but there's no fucking way that book's coming out monthly.
Yeah, we'll see.
And then April is also Redcoat and Rook. I think you're really looking forward to Rook. I'm looking forward more to Redcoat.
Yeah.
And then, there's other stuff that he's got in here. So, like I said, I think you could skip this and it wouldn't matter too much.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing really of interest in here is that it seems like the Geiger ongoing is going to revolve around, like, you remember how end of Junkyard Joe he shows up
and pops out of a portal
and they have like the Avengers moment, like
I
think that's gonna be what the Geiger book is about, because the epilogue to this shows Junkyard Joe like fighting a bunch of robots and shit with Geiger, so
mm-hmm. Okay.
Outsiders issue 3 came out, and you'll really enjoy this issue because so what I'm really liking about this book is that they're all one-shot stories.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an Outsiders book, so we had to get Batman in somehow, right?
Right, of course.
Well, it starts off that the drummer had she meditated.
Uh-huh.
She took a bunch of acid, everybody. And saw this code in her head and gave it to the team. And the code ends up being coordinates to another dimension. And this dimension is the mind space that Batman uses to process his grief.
Interesting.
And then they like travel through it. So it was crazy. Kind of an interesting story. You could see a bunch of different Batman. And there's a cool twist in there too. So I think it's a really fun book.
Yeah, they're doing some awesome stuff, those guys.
So I was really happy to see, even though it was announced that they were dropping the Action Titles moniker, that Action Comics number 1061 came out.
Mm-hmm.
This is part of the Superman Superstars line. This is the first issue that I believe Jason Aaron is writing.
Okay.
And Mike, it's a Bizarro story.
Oh shit, I gotta read it. Okay.
So Bizarro is trying to find his way back to Bizarro World when he accidentally comes across this alternate dimension that is all magical. And he basically kills a bunch of them, steals their magic, and decides they have to go back to Earth Prime to fight Superman. And that's the only way he can get back to his world.
Hell yeah.
So it's Bizarro with magic abilities fighting Superman. That sounds awesome. It's really good. I'm not a big Bizarro guy. I actually find him kind of annoying. And I really, really enjoyed this issue.
I forgot Jason Aaron's taking over. I was going to start reading when Jason Aaron took over Action Comics.
I highly recommend it. I thought it was really well done. And yeah, especially it's Bizarro, so I knew you'd be interested in it.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that last. Blade number 7 came out. Yep. Hulk shows up. Blade fights Hulk. Weird zombie things happen, or vampire things happen like this. Like, I don't know what's going on there.
Okay. That's
cool as hell.
Yeah.
A hand coming out of a guy's mouth.
Why not?
And I don't know. Like, it's basically that it's Blade fighting more vampires. It was a good issue, but like they just randomly had to show have like Hulk show up and then remind me throughout the issue, like, oh, you can find out more about this in the Hulk ongoing book.
What the hell?
I was like, okay, guys. Like, I get it. Hulk has an ongoing. I'm not going to read it.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for reminding me.
But a decent issue. Giant-sized Spider-Man, number 1.
Oh, nice.
This has Miles teaming up with Dylan Brock Venom. If you remember that Dylan Brock is now Venom, Mike.
Mm-hmm. I do remember you telling me that.
And, yeah, so there's some, like, it's a very basic premise. Like, there's secret tech out in New York City. Spider-Man's trying to find it. Venom's also trying to find it. And they realize they have to team up to take care of it. Mm-hmm. But Venom has a different way of doing things than Miles does. So they fight. Not a bad issue. I enjoyed it enough. I like the... it makes me want to... It does succeed to make me want to read the new Venom series because I'm like... Apparently Dylan and Eddie don't get along anymore.
Oh.
And Dylan's just like really doesn't like his dad.
Okay.
Like, what's going on there? And then this is a little confusing for not for me, but I felt like it would be for newcomers. Because the second story in here is the first time Miles fought Venom in the Ultimate Spider-Man series. So if you didn't know what was going on, you'd be like, wait, why is Miles' mom dead? Because okay. In the Ultimate Universe, they made his mom die instead of his dad. And Venom was the cause of it. And that was his, like, no more moment, too.
Mm.
So as I read back through it, and I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this book. This is a good book. This is, like, while Bendis was still, like, kind of on a hot streak.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, if you do pick that up, realize that's where that's coming from.
Okay.
Thunderbolts number 2. Team thinks that Red Skull's dead. He's not dead. A bunch of Nazi gold is on auction and Wilson Fisk has it, so they have to fight Fisk. The end. Good issue.
Nice.
We already talked about Beast World. And my final one, Mike, Ultimate Spider-Man number 1.
Nice.
Jonathan Hickman. I really, really vibed with this book. So we've got a mid-30s, early 40s Peter Parker. Never got bitten by the radioactive spider. Still married to Mary Jane. Works as a newsman for the Daily Bugle.
Mm-hmm.
That's run by J. Jonah Jameson. And Uncle Ben.
Oh shit, that's cool.
So Uncle Ben's still alive in this, and from the events of Ultimate Invasion, there was this big attack on New York City. We find out that Aunt May actually died in that attack.
Mm.
So basically, things happen. Ben and J. Jonah Jameson end up quitting the Bugle, and they're going to do their own thing, and we get the shown that Tony Stark came back and gave Peter the spider that was supposed to bite him as a teenager and gave him this message of like, listen, this was supposed to happen to you. You were supposed to be one of the world's greatest heroes.
Right.
And this is us trying to fix it. So blah, blah, blah. And it ends with him getting bitten by a radioactive spider, Mike.
Nice. That's what you want to see, Chris.
All in all, my big thoughts here is, this is like the ultimate what if book because it's such a different Peter Parker.
Yeah.
I vibed with it a lot because not only is his age around the same as me, but like I can feel what he's feeling. Mm-hmm. Like this idea of when you're in your 30s and 40s and you're like, is this what my life is? And is this like, am I happy? And, right. You know, is this what I'm going to do forever? Mm-hmm. Like those, he talks a lot about that throughout it. So I found it very relatable.
Mm-hmm.
and it does have the, you know, it was a Spider-Man book with no Spider-Man, but it was setting up a lot. And we did get the first appearance of the Green Goblin for this universe.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that makes me want to read it now.
There's a lot of good things. I think I would really tell people out there to give this a shot, especially people our age. Mm-hmm. I know you're a little bit younger than me, but still.
Still in my 30s.
Yeah. I would say give it a shot because you don't have to have read Ultimate Invasion. They do a really good job of like letting you know the important stuff that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And even like the attack that Aunt May dies in, like they go back over it and say like, this is what happened. And you find out later on, like who they think is responsible for it and all this stuff. Right. So it's a great, great first issue. And I'm really excited for this book moving forward. This is a great start for the new Ultimate Universe. All in all.
Awesome.
10 out of 10.
Awesome. That's what I want to hear.
Oh yeah, Mark Wachtel is doing the art, so it's phenomenal.
Yeah, the art looks amazing.
Yeah. So yeah, if you do read it, we should talk about it next week. So I'd be really interested to see what you think about it.
Okay. Yeah.
But Mike, that was everything I read this week. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Fortress Ricker on Twitter. Where can they find you and or the show?
Well, you can find me at Fortress Chris on Twitter. Also on and you can find the show at Fortress Comics _ on Twitter, also at FortressComicNews.com. Remember everybody to give us the 5-star reviews on podcatchers, like, subscribe, share, comment down below on the YouTube version, and go over patreon.com/fortresscomics for more. Thank you all so much for watching and or listening this week, and we'll see y'all here next week.